If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome everyone to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
And I'm BJ.
And this week we are continuing our discussion into the history of Dragon Quest, all the cool behind the scenes stuff that went into it. Last week's episode ended with us talking about the Dragon Quest II coming out and also Dragon Warrior coming over here in the U.S. and in North America. Mm-hmm. Really quickly, do you want to give everybody like a quick TLDR about Dragon Warrior Nintendo Power?
Yeah, so the Dragon Warrior Nintendo Power, when it came out, Dragon Warrior didn't do as well as it should have over here in the United States and in the West. So Nintendo had entirely too many copies of Dragon Warrior, which is the first Dragon Quest in the Americas. And so they published a giveaway through Nintendo Power that for every new subscription that they would send you a copy of Dragon Warrior for the NES. And it came, you know, in the box as the game itself. They had the cart and everything. It was really, really awesome. My friend got it. I didn't actually subscribe, but my friend Luke at the time when I was a little kid, he got it and we just sat and played it. But it was a way to try to get the game out there to the community, as Dragon Quest II was already out in Japan. And, you know, the success of Dragon Warrior I would then the success of Dragon Warrior II would predicate on the success of Dragon Warrior I. And it still only did fine-ish. Like, it's got good memories for a lot of people, but it wasn't nearly as popular as they had hoped it would be, even giving it away. It was kind of sad, actually, looking back now.
Yeah, and then around the same time, around the time that Dragon Warrior 1 was circulating around the U.S. and a lot of American Dragon Quest fans were playing their very first Dragon Quest game, we had Dragon Quest III coming out in Japan, which this was the game changer. Like I talked about last week, maybe about how, you know, first game did better than they expected it to. And then second game did well. And Dragon Quest was starting to kind of, it wasn't quite a phenomenon yet, but it was like, it was a popular series in Japan. People were loving it. And then you had Dragon Quest III came out, which was like the just a huge cultural phenomenon there. Like, can't stress enough what a big deal it was. And I pulled up sales data on this before we recorded the episode, because I remember it was like a pretty crazy amount.
Right.
In its first week alone, Dragon Quest III sold 1 million copies in its first week.
Wow. Yeah.
Which this was the 80s. That's a big deal.
That's massive. Yeah.
Yeah. So even compared to some AAA games today, 1 million in the first week is still huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
For point of reference, the Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin game, its first week sales were like 46,000.
Right. That's actually more than I would have wanted it to sell. No, that's actually worse than I expected it to be. I figured it would sell a couple hundred thousand during the first week.
But still, that's the most recent Square Enix game.
Absolutely. So you're looking back at that versus the initial Dragon Warrior.
Yeah. So you're looking at Dragon Quest III, which 1 million first week. This is also around the time when the huge urban myth starts about Dragon Quest games having to be released on Saturdays.
Yes.
Because of kids and adults skipping work and school. And
right.
So the true story behind this that Yuji Horii and some other DQ producers have given in interviews, the true story that's behind this is that the original games came out on Tuesdays, I believe. Either way, it was in the middle of the week.
Yeah, middle of the week.
When Dragon Quest III came out, there was so much hype surrounding it already that a lot of people, you know, took off from work, didn't go to work. You had lots of kids who were busy waiting in line and then were busy playing it, who didn't go to school and all of these things. And so, yes, that part of it is true. There were a lot of people who were playing this game and missing work and school because of it. But there was no law. There wasn't the quote unquote Dragon Quest law that people reference a lot. Like, there's no government law that says, hey, Dragon Quest games have to release on Saturdays. What happened instead is that because this was an issue, that they decided, okay, we'll release these games on Saturdays now so that people don't have to worry about missing work and school in order to play them.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, and that is incredibly conscientious for a game developer. Like, I honestly don't know if today, if that hadn't started in the 80s, I don't know if there would be a game company today that would do something like that, because it's kind of seen as a mark of pride, people taking off of work and using their PTO and missing school for the release of games.
Yeah, that's true, but you also have to think about how many people like didn't take PTO or didn't take just completely skipped school, skipped work kind of thing too. And in the 80s and too, I mean, work conditions, PTO, like all that stuff has greatly changed since
it has changed
since
a lot.
1980s. And we're talking about,
did you ever skip school for a game? Anything like that? Did you ever, when you were growing up, did your parents ever let you, or you just did it, skip school for anything like that?
I never skipped school for a game. The only day I ever remember skipping school, like intentionally skipping, was when I was in high school. Most of my friends that I was really close to were in the grade above me. I was always friends with like older kids, and the friends were in the grade ahead of me. And one of my friends, Jordan Robertson, she was wanting to do senior skip day for those seniors. I was a junior. And anyway, and so I ended up skipping school with her, and we went out like to the mall, and then met up with some of my other friends there, some of whom had already graduated, and just kind of hung out. But it wasn't for a game or anything. It was just like, you know, senior skip day.
Okay.
It wasn't my skip day. The only senior skip day I ever did was not even, I wasn't even a senior.
I did. I skipped a couple of times. One of them was for the episode 9 or the episode 1 premiere in 1999. I skipped school that day and actually held my teacher's space in line and got them tickets. So I wasn't counted absent. And then, right. It was awesome. And then my mom let me skip. I told her that a house was collapsing in Ultima Online.
Yeah.
And I wanted to sit and camp the house to try to place my own, because it was in a really excellent spot in the game, and I was like super into this game, and it was worth like real world money in that location. You could sell it. And she let me skip school that day to camp a collapsing house in Ultima Online, and I ended up getting it, and that was one of the houses I ended up selling for hundreds of dollars later. It was awesome. My mom just being like, yeah, you know what, if you want to do that, that's fine. And it was awesome. Like, it makes me so happy that I was 16. I remember I was 16 because that was when I still lived at the old house. That wasn't at where once we had moved after I was 16. So I know I was 16 years old when both of those happened. Like, it was great. Like, that's one of my favorite like memories of skipping school. It's like, my mom let me do that to get a house in Ultima Online.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, for me, like, there were definitely some game releases that I remember where it was like I got obsessed with it and I was like have to play it all the time. Like Legend of Dragoon is probably my first memory of a game coming out where I was like, I played it. Like, I would wake up early before school and play it a whole bunch as much as possible to get extra playtime in, but I would still go to school. When FF14 came out, you know, I was the same way, playing it before work a lot of times and everything. Like, I would wake up early before work when a new patch came out. And then when Dragon Quest XI came out, I didn't miss work for it, but it was like my family and I went up. I'd been playing the game for just a few weeks and was like very much obsessed with it. And my family and I were going up to Orlando for the week to spend some time, like for was like for Thanksgiving, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you go look at like the Christmas lights at Disney and things like that. So we got an Airbnb house for like the week, and I, you know, packed up my PS4 and everything and just toted it right up there with me, because there was no way when I wasn't at the parks or wasn't doing stuff with family, like at night and early in the mornings, like I was playing Dragon Quest 11.
that makes sense. Like I remember that, like you going like all in on it with that.
Yeah. And then I was still playing it around Christmas time. Because I was trying to platinum it and everything. And so I, you know, packed the PS4 up and all that stuff and carried it with me to Tennessee. I'm very, very much happier with the Switch version because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to tote DQ11 around now.
It's true. Have you played, I can't remember if I've asked you this or not. Speaking of like toting it around, have you played the PS5? Have you played the 11S on the PS4 version of 11S on the PS5 for like the
yes,
enhanced like performance and all of it you would get from the PS5?
Yes. It looks really good. It runs.
Does it? Is it pretty?
Yeah.
Because I haven't opened my copy of, I don't actually have 11S on the PS4. I have just 11, and I haven't opened my copy of it to put into the PS5. So I know that the Force Awakens Lego game looks really, really awesome on the PS5. So I can only imagine what DQ11 looks like. But yeah, that, for some reason that popped into my head when you were talking about toting it around. I'm like, I wonder if you're going to tote around your PS5 at some point.
Because yes, 11 is awesome on PS5. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah, I haven't beaten it on PS5 yet, just because there's been so many other games to play, and I've played 11 like a lot. but yeah, for DQ3, so this had a huge cultural impact on Japan. There's photos that you can still find online where it's just like the lines are backed around, you know, street corners. There are signs saying it's sold out. They don't know when they're going to be back in stock, things like that. I read in an interview with Miyamoto where he said that they actually increased production of cartridges. Nintendo did, because of Dragon Quest 3 coming out. They knew they knew, because I guess because of like, you know, marketing and traction and stuff, they knew this game was going to be huge. And so they like started increasing productions of their carts like big time because of Dragon Quest 3. And then you also had things like, you know, Zelda. We talked about Zelda. The first Zelda came out right before the first Dragon Quest game. And then you had Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link, which has the infamous like Here Lies Rodo on it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. This was also repeated as a grave in the first Final Fantasy game in Elfheim. Mm-hmm. And they changed it after Square Enix merged. They changed it to Link, which and I don't know if the merger is what caused it, but I feel like it probably did.
I feel like it could have. Yeah.
Yeah. But you had, you know, a lot of games were calling out to this because Dragon Quest had such an impact, and it was almost like these other guys were jealous. So they put in these little Easter eggs to like try to bury the game. And obviously Zelda 2 did not have the cultural impact that Dragon Quest 3 did. I think Zelda 2 is probably widely considered the worst one, right?
It's still good though. Like I still like it. Zelda 2 is a good game for what it is. It was experimental, and I've always enjoyed Zelda 2.
Yeah, I don't remember much of Zelda 2. I remember giving it a try and not liking it when I was a kid, and I've never gone back to it as an adult.
Like I've played it a little bit on the Game & Watch that you got me for Christmas, and like it's still a fun little game. Like it's not the typical Zelda game that people wanted at the time, but I remember it's the same as the DQ1 thing. Luke and I played it. He had Zelda 2, and I had Zelda 1, and we would sit and we would play Zelda 2 a lot, and it was just different and fun. I don't know, maybe it's because I have decent memories of it as a child, but it had a lot more like RPG elements than the original Zelda did, with towns and shops and things like that. Like I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the side scrolling parts. So so meh, people. But yeah, it didn't hit like people wanted it, but I still hold that it's a really good game.
Yeah. So Zelda 2, I think it was the North American version of Final Fantasy. That first had it, had all this stuff, you know, against Rodo, because, or Erdrick. Lodo is, in later renditions, as the hero is known, Which, by the way, is a mistranslation. I asked the translator about it in an interview that you can read over on DragonQuestAustin.com. I know we're not at the shameless self-promotion segment yet, but I feel like some people who grew up hearing Lodo are going to be like, why do you guys keep calling it Rodo? Well, that's why. It's because we have an official answer now that it was just a mistranslated thing. Because Nob Agasawara, the guy that translated that interview, the reason for that is he just said that he thought that the that Americans would not want a hero with rot in their name. which makes sense.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole Rodo thing really kicked off. You had this huge twist ending where not only was the game like, first you had a twist ending was that there was more game left and that you fell into the worlds from one and two. Mm-hmm. And then there was a huge twist even further along at the very end where you find out that you are the hero, the Rodo, the Erdrick from the first two games, and that the first two games are about your descendants and all that. So it was like this really big deal. People were really excited about it, had that job system, vocations that people loved. It was very expansive, and especially for its time. And even today, it holds up really, really well. I feel like it holds up the best out of any of the first trilogy, the Erdrick trilogy. Like DQ3 is the one that holds up the best. And this is, I mean, this is why they're remaking it first. This is why DQ3 is getting a remake, because I mean, it's got its own following in the West, but I mean, in Japan, this is like the game. Like, this is the thing that inspired so many JRPGs that came after it and inspired like countless video game developers since then. And so, yep. I mean, of course they're going to remake DQ3 first. I mean, this is like the Dragon Quest game. It's the most Dragon Quest-y of all the Dragon Quests.
It I like that. It really is. I mean, I will hold that Dragon Quest 1 is the most accessible to start with of the three, but really Dragon Quest 3 holds up the best by far. It's the one that feels way more like a modern game than it was. So far ahead of its time when it came out.
Yeah, for sure. And then after Dragon Quest 3 came out, it really left Yuji Horii and the whole Dragon Quest team kind of in a, like, what do we do now? Because they had this trilogy now. They had really gone back to the beginning with the twist ending there at DQ3. And so it was like, where do you go from here? Is this like the end of the series? What's going to happen from here? And it wasn't the end of the series, obviously. But before we get into talking about Dragon Quest IV, I do think it's time for a little shameless self-promotion.
Shameless! Oh, shameless! It's time to be so shameless.
That was something.
It was, wasn't it? You're welcome.
Those high notes, though. Yeah, it was like the ghost of Michael Jackson singing right now. Not really.
I'm not sure if I should take that as a compliment or an insult.
Yeah, not really. You did not quite hit those MJ.
Oh, no, never notes. No. I love just being off key and terrible.
Yeah. But apparently other people do too, because no one's yelled at us for doing these yet.
Nope, not yet.
But we do have a Patreon page I want to tell everybody about. You can visit patreon.com/DragonQuestFM if you want to help this podcast, help support us, and also support BJ's singing career, aspiring singing career. Then you can do that by visiting patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. Also wanted to mention that the Dragon Quest Around the World interviews that I mentioned in last week's episode have started rolling out. The first one is live right now at the time of this recording, which is from Dragon Quest France, the person that runs the biggest DQ France fan community for Dragon Quest. Interviewed them. So the first one is about France. I've got a bunch more lined up on the way from places like Argentina, India, Hungary, Spain. So there's a lot on the way, and there should be another one going up sometime later this week. Also, I wanted to mention that Dragon Quest FM is about to celebrate its 150th episode, which is
that nuts. Is crazy.
It is crazy, right? And
like, we thought that it wasn't even going to be, we weren't going to be able to do it every week or anything and be like, well, we'll do it whenever we can, whenever we have something to talk about.
That's true. But then we always have things to talk about.
Yeah.
And people were very supportive of us on like social media, Patreon, just all over the place. And so we were like, hey, let's talk about Dragon Quest every week. It's fun. It lets us catch up. And people have not hated us yet, or it's at least true, the, or maybe the majority. Yeah. I'm sure there are people who listening who are like, well, I hate you. I'm never listening to an episode again, but anyway,
or they're hate listening, like which hate I'm fine listening. With too.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, 150 episode is coming up in just a few weeks. And so we have this thing that we haven't mentioned a lot lately, but you can go to anchor.fm/Dragon Quest and leave us voice messages. And so if you want to just leave us a quick like, hey, share a favorite Dragon Quest memory with us or whatever, we thought this would be a special time to share those from some people because it's 150. I mean, that's a big milestone. And so if you want to do that, you can visit anchor.fm/Dragon Quest and leave us a voice message and we'll try our best to put it on the show. We're going to try to put a lot of them in to that 150 episode. So we'd love to hear from you.
It's true. That reminds me of a story of putting them in the show. One of Jennifer's favorite things about me is it comes up occasionally was that when I was 18 years old, I had a local radio show on Saturday nights. Yep. And called BJ and the Kids on the Square. Yep. And like the best part about it wasn't that, is that it's an AM radio show. And one night somebody called in and was talking and I was and wanted me to put them on the air, blah, blah, blah. We talked for a little bit and I did. And the first thing they did was drop the F-bomb. Like, I trusted them. They dropped the F-bomb and I sat there just completely mortified. And like this station was owned by somebody out of like New Jersey. And like I immediately got a call from like the people who owned the radio station, whom I'd never spoken with before. And I'm just absolutely mortified. 18-year-old me is just like, I didn't mean to. They said they weren't going to do anything. And it was awful. So I'm imploring all of these people that if you drop the F-bomb in this, I'm not putting you on the air because I learned my lesson 20 years ago.
Okay.
So, well, yeah, but that's what I thought of when you were like, we'll put you on. I'm like, but I'm so careful now.
I said, we'll try. I said, we'll try to. I mean, I don't know how many we're going to get. And I put this on Twitter too, and there's a few of them that have come through already. So,
right.
So as time allows and as, as BJ's stringent rules allow,
no F-bombs.
We'll do this. But anyway, we would love for you guys to celebrate our 150th episode with us. So that again is anchor.fm/Dragon Quest.
It seems like we hear about a new cyber attack almost every single day.
Now on the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack.
Malicious cyber actors are targeting the healthcare and public.
This isn't just about hacking big corporations anymore. It's about hacking you.
You don't really know how prepared you are until it happens.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, host of Click Here, a new podcast making sense of all things cyber and intelligence, from disinformation campaigns to ransomware.
They call them cyber mercenaries.
Do you think you guys are ready for the next ransomware attack?
Oh, I never want to jinx myself with that.
And how we stop them.
They pulled out a badge, and at that point, I was just like, holy shit.
Click here, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting back into today's episode, though. So Dragon Quest III came out. It was like huge, massive. Just it can't emphasize enough how big this was. But it also left Yuji Horii kind of in a like creative funk.
Yeah.
I've read multiple interviews with him from the Shmuplations website that translates interviews that I mentioned last week has some. There's just several floating around on the internet from different gaming websites. There's the Dragon Quest, Legend of Dragon Quest book that I think I mentioned last week as well that has some little snippets from interviews in it. So this is kind of pieced together from just a wide variety of sources and yep. reading materials here. But essentially what happened was that Yuji Horii, understandably, I mean, he'd been working like nonstop on this series. He had like made this really important, successful trilogy, had really helped to launch like an entire genre on his own. And so understandably, yeah, it's like, where do you go from here?
Yeah.
And so he was kind of stuck. It didn't hold them up for too long. I mean, Dragon Quest IV mm-hmm. released in Japan in 1990. So this was not a, this was not like a, oh, where do I go from here? And then, you know, he sat for like 10 years. He pulled a George R. R. Martin and is like, I'm working on The Winds of Winter, I promise. But then is literally doing anything else but that. It wasn't like that, but it was kind of like he said that he wasn't sure what to do. Where does he go from here? Like, he felt like nothing that he could do could top Dragon Quest III. And so it was it, but eventually the solution to that was Dragon Quest IV and shaking up the formula a bit. And he did this by, I read that he was inspired by like the omnibus kind of storytelling where, you know, you have a, which omnibus, for those who maybe aren't familiar with the term, it's like a collection of a bunch of different things, like a comic book omnibus or the Nimbus omnibus.
Amazon.com.
Yeah. All like it's a collection of things. And so the Dragon Quest IV is very much that, you know, it follows chapters. It's like a storybook. You play through the chapters, and then at the very end, in the fifth chapter, you go around and collect everybody, and then everybody comes together. And I think it was probably a smart decision in a lot of ways to really to make this change, because the expectations for DQ3 were so high that it's like, where, what do you do after that? You know, how do you top, right. How do you top Dragon Quest III? Do you have an immediate sequel, you know, that's set after, that's like that Erdrick Sun? Do you follow up as a sequel to DQ2? Do you just like throw all of that out and create your own new thing? You know, what happens? And so I think it was a smart decision to do that, but also they put a huge emphasis on characters. Like, Dragon Quest IV is really where the storytelling and characters start to shine. And it's also one of those reasons that I get really up in arms when people say Dragon Quest doesn't change. Because I'm like, it changes. Like, do we need to take this outside? I will show you graphs.
I wish you had graphs.
I will show you pie charts of Dragon Quest III's narrative compared to narrative and characterization in Dragon Quest IV. I got bar graph, son.
I want to see you Charlie Day people with like Dragon Quest graphs and like versus like Final Fantasy narrative graphs. Like, I really want this to happen.
Yeah, but seriously, I really do. That's one thing that just, it's like a huge pet peeve of mine is whenever people are like, Dragon Quest hasn't really changed. And I'm like, but it totally has. Every Dragon Quest game is different. And you see a huge difference in DQ3 and DQ4. And it did pay off. You know, Dragon Quest IV did not have the cultural impact that DQ3 did in the West or in Japan. And in the West, it was the last Dragon Quest game that released in North America for a long time. Dragon Warrior IV came out on the NES.
Yep, they skipped 5 and 6 completely, and a lot of people didn't know about 4. I didn't know about 4 for a good long time, being an NES game. Like, it came out in America so close to the end of the NES's life cycle that I honestly didn't know that it existed until like we started really digging in on Dragon Quest, looking around, like playing them all the way through, that I didn't know it was an NES game, that I never once saw a Dragon Quest 4 in the video store or in any of the magazines. Like, it never stuck out to me at all. I remember 3. I remember Dragon Warrior 3 and everything, but man, 4 was a complete miss in like my cultural recognition of like RPGs at the time.
It's still the one that I see the least like for sale online. Mm-hmm. A while back I even saw on eBay where it was like complete Dragon Warrior NES set and it did have Dragon Warrior 4 in it, and I was just like,
ouch. Pain.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I will never own Dragon Warrior 4 on NES because I didn't buy it when it was new, and it's now stupidly expensive.
I haven't looked in a while. What's it going for right now?
Like, I haven't checked in a little while, but the last time I checked, it was like $300. If you wanted a box and the game for Dragon Warrior 4, it was like $300. And if you only wanted the cartridge, it was still going to cost you like an entire Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. It's silly. It flew under the radar for all of like everyone, like all fans and stuff like that. Like, so few people got it when it came out, and they took that to mean that, well, nobody really cares about it over here after all, and stopped giving them to us. But we did get Chrono Trigger. which I'm fine with.
Well, that's a debate for a different day. But, but yeah, but then after Dragon Warrior 4 released over here in the States, we skipped 5, 6 until the DS remakes came out. And then we had Dragon Warrior 7 that released on the PS1 and didn't do so high in the States. It did. I always found this fascinating that Dragon Quest 7 outsold Final Fantasy 7 in Japan.
Right.
Like Final Fantasy 7 is, you know, had a huge cultural impact in the United States because this served Final Fantasy 7 was like the introduction to JRPGs for like an entire generation of people. And to an American, the idea that Dragon Warrior 7, this game that looked really outdated and moved kind of slow on PS1, the idea that that outsold a game like Final Fantasy 7 just seems kind of mind-boggling until you look at how important Dragon Quest is in Japan. And it kind of all goes back really to Dragon Quest 3 as a way to just kind of tie this all up before we dive into any other Dragon Quest games. It really all goes back to Dragon Quest 3. 1 and 2 were good. They were celebrated titles. They were successful, but it was really Dragon Quest 3 that put Dragon Quest on the map and just has really given it the longevity and the recognition that it's gotten, the acclaim it's gotten. A lot of that is owed to Dragon Quest 3.
I look forward to getting one of the things I haven't played are the Game Boy versions that you mentioned. I want to play the Game Boy Color version of Dragon Warrior 3, but it's relatively expensive still. And I don't have a Game Boy Color. I have a Game Boy and then some Game Boy Advances. But I actually want the Game Boy Color and to play it. But getting the actual set of Dragon Warrior 3 on the Game Boy Color can be expensive. So that's one that I really want to play through. For some reason, that one's just so pretty. And it's supposed to be really good, a good translation. So yeah. I look forward to getting through those eventually whenever I can find one that's not out of the range at which I'm willing to pay for it.
So This is kind of off subject, but it's also an update because I said a few weeks back about how I was wanting to play Dragon Quest III on the Game Boy Color, but I didn't have AA batteries. And I was like, oh my God, I haven't bought AA batteries in like years. I don't need them for anything. We had like this whole conversation about 3 or 4 episodes back. About 2 weeks ago, I was asked to review Amazon Luna, the streaming service for work. And the controller has AA batteries, okay? Came with AA batteries. And as far as streaming, it's fine. I wouldn't recommend the service to people because it's like kind of one of those like, who is this for kind of things.
Yeah.
But that's an entire discussion for another day. But anyway, so I have this controller left over now that I'm not really going to be probably using very much unless it's like plugged in. It didn't come with like a charger or like a cord or anything. It's just that and 2 AA batteries. But I have some AA batteries now that I can plug into my Game Boy Color and play Dragon Quest 3 on, hopefully. I'm really close to beating Trails of Cold Steel 4 right now.
Are you finally close? I know that we've been talking about it a bunch. I didn't know how far you were in it.
It's a super long game, and it was like the last one that was going to be out in the States for a while, so I really dragged my feet on it for a long time because I was like, well, once I beat it, what, I'm not going to have another one to play. But then, you know, Trails from Zero comes out in September, and so now I'm like, okay, it's cool for me to speed things up a little bit and actually beat this game now because I'm going to have another one.
With enough time in between to kind of rest between such a massive kind of RPG.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But either way, I have AA batteries now, so I'm hoping to, I guess maybe after Trails of Cold Steel 4, maybe I'll play Dragon Quest 3 on Game Boy Color, because I do have AA batteries now. So yeah, fun fact there at the end of this
episode.
Good
talk. Good talk,
thank you guys. Yeah, thanks. Thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at DragonQuestFM. You can also talk to us on Patreon at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. And if you want to talk to me on Twitter, you can find me at DragonQuestin. Those Dragon Quest Around the World interviews, you can find at DragonQuestAustin.com.
And you can talk to me on Twitter at Professor Beej. You can listen to my other podcast, the Geek to Geek podcast, you know, wherever you're listening to this one, because it's a podcast. And you can talk to me and Austin and all the other people in Geek to Geek Media at our Discord at discord.geektogeekmedia.com.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
What was that voice?
Bye, baby.